Well, hello, everybody. Stephen Billings here again, and we are back for part two of Movies Down Memory Lane, this time Jim Carrey. Part two of the Jim Carrey series, and we're calling part two The Mainstream. And this is a smaller group of his films where Jim Carrey, you know, he was a huge star, you know, as we did in part one. It was his early part of his career, and he was, you know, having tons of big hits with things like The Mask, and you know, Ace Ventura, Dumb and Dumber, all them things. And leading up through there, of course, he had some other films, some dramatic films that we'll do in part three, but he started doing, you know, bigger movies, big movies that were not really part of the Jim Carrey stamp. You know, there were bigger IPs. There were where he could take his wackiness that he does for himself and include it in something way bigger than himself. So this group of films we're calling the mainstream. So, of course, with me as always is Andrew Cabral. What's up, man?
What's up? Yeah, we are back here once again to continue this foray into the filmography of one Jim Carrey. Last time we talked about the big heavy hitters, the heavy comedy hitters from the early days and throughout his career all the way up until pretty much now for the most part. And yeah, this is a bit of an interesting, more deeper dive into some of the, and I wouldn't even say lesser known, but some of the ones he kind of just did. You know what just, I mean? Like they're there, you know?
I mean, some of them, I think you could say there was some ambition there, but for the most part, I feel like some of these were what we would call paycheck movies. You know, he did them probably because, you know, good payday.
Yeah, probably good payday. Probably because he just wanted to work. And
of course.
They're interesting. They're interesting in the sense that they all kind of have this through line of being adaptations of either books or children's books or from like big children book properties or just adaptations of some type of other medium. So like there's a theme going on here throughout all of these.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a big kid. Kids, we have a big kid that joins us, of course, on Movies Down Memory Lane. Our third part here, that's Dan Skip Allen, man. I don't see him, though. He's completely dark now. He's gone. We must have lost Dan. All right, well, we'll see if we get Dan back. So with Jim Carrey Part 2, The Mainstream, we're getting into right around the late 90s. Do we have him back? There's Dan.
Oh, there he is.
Hey.
Okay, good.
How's it going, guys?
What happened?
I'm sure you were going to try to add me to the stream. Of course, my deal froze of all the, you know, just worst timing of all time. You know, you can't have good timing. You know, you have to have bad timing, you know. I'm glad to be back on Movies Down Memory Lane, talking about Jim Carrey, and this time more of his mainstream films, you know, movies like Andrew said, the movies where he played comic book characters or literary characters or villains from video games or animated characters. Where maybe, you know, look this up. Maybe one of us should have already looked this up, but does he have children? Maybe he did some of these movies for his children. You know, a lot of times, like Eddie Murphy changed his whole way of doing things because he wanted to make movies for his kids and give his kids something to watch. And so he had that whole run in the 2000s and where he did animated movies. He played Donkey and all these characters, you know?
Yeah. I believe he's got at least two kids. I think he's got a daughter he had earlier on in his life. And then later on, I think with Jesse McCarthy, I think they had one child together, I think.
Yeah. That makes sense. He did some of these movies that more in that vein of the type of thing you would do if you're a father looking to give your kids something to watch you. And, you know, some of those movies he was in, I don't know if you want your kids watching, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course. Being a comedian, children's films are a place where, you know, not even just for his kids, but just more people can experience Jim Carrey, you know, if you're doing different types of films and not just all R-rated comedies or PG-13 comedies. So, but let's get into it. So I would say the first place to start, and this was really the first big one that, and I apologize to everybody. Last time I had a lot more video clips to help supplement this episode, but for some reason we were having problems with downloading these videos beforehand. So I only got one video clip. It's not this first one, but I only have one video clip to go along with what we're talking about. So, but the first film I think really was the big blow up moment for Jim Carrey was, I think it's 1997, and that's Batman Forever.
1995. Go 95. Back a little further.
Yeah. Batman Forever.
Yeah, Batman Forever. I was going to ask you, Stephen, did you ever see this movie in the theater at the time?
If I did, when I don't really remember. I probably did.
I know that you're a little younger than me, but I remember distinctly being at the cinema when this came out opening weekend. Yeah. And I was probably close to 8 years old, depending on the day it came out. My birthday's in June, so if this was a summer movie at that time, I would have saw it around my birthday or maybe a little bit after or before that. It actually came out June 16th, 1995. That's one day before my birthday. Happy birthday to me, circa 1995. But I remember being at the box office, seeing this movie in the theater, because I had seen the previous Batman movie. I had seen Batman Returns in the theater back in 92 when I was a ripe age of like 5 years old. That's one of my first movie theater experiences was Batman Returns that I can remember. And this is another early on one. But yeah, back in 95, this is the third Batman movie after Tim Burton's Batman. And then, of course, Tim Burton's sequel, Batman Returns. And this was a big follow-up, but different director, different vibe. Joel Schumacher. Yeah. It got the Jim Carrey playing the Riddler, one of two villains in the film, the other one being Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face. And then you've got a new Batman and Val Kilmer. This was a big summer movie back in 95.
Yeah, yeah. And underrated Batman, Val Kilmer.
I think so as well.
The thing is I think, like a lot of Batmans, he actually played both parts well, I think, Bruce Wayne and Batman. Most of the time, it's one or the other for me. It's like somebody focuses more on, I mean, I think Christian Bale's the best Batman still. Like, I think he does both well. But for me, and I know this is going to be blasphemy, I don't think Michael Keaton's a good Batman. I think he's a great Bruce Wayne, but he's not a good Batman. So that's just me.
I can hear the roar. I can hear the anger.
It's all it for me. I mean, like maybe his like stoic, like when he wants to be stoic, he's great as Batman. But like, I just could never believe him as kicking anybody's ass. So that's the problem. And it's the same with George Clooney. Like George Clooney, he can kind of play Bruce Wayne because he's a rich dude, but in real life, but that's about it. He can't play Batman. He just doesn't do it. He might have the chin for it, but that's about it. And then Ben Affleck just fucking got roided out.
Well, thing is, you could believe him at beating the heck out of people.
I could believe him as Batman, but Bruce Wayne, he just was, you know, he was just there. He barely played him.
Different story for a different time, I guess. But yeah. Just going back to Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, man.
This is, of course, so this is 95. This is, what, a year after his big blow-up that we talked about in the first part when he was in The Mask, Dumb and Dumber, and Ace Ventura. So this is like the next step up in it was stardom.
Dan, what was your first memories of this movie? When did you see it in theaters?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters, and I'll be honest. I just looked at it like, okay, Joel Schumacher's trying to rip off Tim Burton, and then he's not doing it as good. I do agree that Val Kilmer was a good Batman and Bruce Wayne, but I just think the villains are, and I hate to say this, I think you get that big step up in stardom. You have 94 that you just blow up, and then you take these roles. Cha-ching, 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 and I think it was a mistake. I'll be honest with you. I think playing an Edward Nigma for Jim Carrey was a mistake. Rewatching this movie recently, it doesn't hold up. I think him, and the fact of the matter is, him and Tommy Lee Jones did not get along off a set. and they had, they didn't want anything to do with each other. Mm-hmm. And because Jim Carrey was this, he was staying in character the whole time, and he was this wacky, goofy Riddler character. And, you know, Tommy Lee Jones, he's more of a stoic, kind of straightforward guy, even though he was playing a goofy version of Two-Face, you know. That's, I don't think it's the best Two-Face, and I don't think Jim Carrey is the best Riddler. I would take, I still, to this
I don't
day,
know that we've gotten a live action Two-Face that really works yet.
Oh, Aaron Eckhart is amazing. I think
he was barely in the movie, though.
It's, well, I still think he's an
acting. I mean, he might have looked, he might have his Harvey Dent was great, but he was barely Two-Face in the movie.
Well, his turn to Two-Face was really good.
Yeah.
You could see him breaking down until he became Two-Face. Yeah. This is such. Man, the 90s were a wild time for comic book adaptations. It's nothing like today. Nothing at all. Yeah. I remember, you know, the wacky, over-the-top nature of this movie was a super contrast to the earlier films, done on purpose, obviously. I think the studio wanted that. Jim Carrey's basically playing a clown, if you think so. Like, he's super over the top. He's making all these riddles and puns and all this kind of stuff. Great one-liners in this movie. There's that one moment where he hits a guy over the head with a coffee can, and he goes, "Caffeine will kill you." I think that's hilarious. You know what I mean?
Caffeine will kill you.
A lot of one-liners. You know, there's the part where he's like dangling that boss like out of the window and whatnot, and he's playing it to the nines. He's hamming it up to the extreme.
Yeah,
that's Jim Carrey. You know, that's him.
Edward Nygma, though.
That's the thing.
Yeah, like, that's a whole other kind of thing where it's is it a good adaptation of the character? And you know,
he might not be what the Riddler is in the comics necessarily, but I think, you know, as we know with adaptations, you're going to have your different interpretations. And I think for the movie that was being made, I think you could say that he played a weird, you know, an over the top version of the Riddler. It was very distinct. It's very Jim Carrey. It's you know, the only thing to me that somewhat bothers me is that, maybe it's just the switch, you know, it's almost like that because they copied the whole transfer from how he hated Bruce Wayne because he didn't like his ideas. You know, it's a little bit like, you know, like, okay, just like they did in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I was going to say, this does have the kind of classic villain origin story of this kind of loser guy who's envious or admires the hero. And then when the hero doesn't end up being what he thinks it is, he wants to take revenge on him.
And I would have preferred
that kind of spurs his whole villain arc.
Yeah. I don't know what the original origin of Riddler is, but I would assume it's not so, you know, almost like childish, you know, like a little on the childish side.
The thing too is, real quick, is they offered the role to Robin Williams before giving it to Jim Carrey when Robin Williams turned it down. Do you think Robin Williams is going to play the Riddler like that? I don't think so.
No, not that physical. No, not as physical, not with the jumping around. And I think he would have probably played it a little more sinister, probably. I'm going to assume. But you know, he was also known for doing dramatic roles by then.
Yeah.
You know, so he could have, it would have been easy for us to understand that.
Right.
Jim Carrey was in the height of being this
slapsticky clown cartoon man. It's kind of, what's interesting is it's a little bit of a muted version of what he was doing in The Mask with that type of zaniness. I mean, there's the great sequence in the I'm using it as a general term, where he and Two-Face break into the Batcave and are like throwing like these little rubber duckies or these little toys that explode around and stuff like that. The movie definitely had they wanted to make this appeal to kids, and you could tell they were like, "How do we get something?"
Batman the Animated Series was so popular,
right? The thing is, Batman the Animated Series is a darker version of Batman in that world than this movie is, and certainly the next movie, Batman and Robin. You know what I mean?
Why I think Tim Burton didn't get on here for this third one, because I think they wanted him to make it more colorful, more right? And he had that whole aesthetic that he had already set up in Batman and Batman Returns. And they're like, come on, let's bring some color to it. Let's get it more bright.
Batman Returns. Yeah, that whole Tim Burton aesthetic was dialed up to like a million in Batman Returns. Black and white, leather, you know, gothic. It's that whole right? 90s. Like you know, the Crow would take up that banner like right afterwards as well. You know, it's so fascinating how like at that time, what studios wanted, what people wanted, what, you know, whatever the case may be. What is interesting about this movie is I think a lot of people from our generation, Steven, have a lot of nostalgia for this film.
Yeah.
Because we saw it so young.
Dick Tracy though, maybe, and then let's copy, see if we can capture some of that Dick Tracy kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure, could be wrong.
Well, I do have this movie on 4K. I do enjoy going back to it every once in a while. But it was a big moment for Jim. I mean, I believe this was a pretty big box office hit. So that, you know, this was a big deal for Jim Carrey and his career. And it would, I think, lead him into doing more, you know, bigger, you know, somewhat bigger roles.
Remember that we all know the story of him having that he wrote himself a check for $10 million and he put it in his wallet, and that one day he was going to cast that check. And I believe you could look it up. He may have gotten that money on this movie.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I can't remember what, damn it, I'm forgetting which movie it was, but there was a movie he did where he was the first actor to get $20 million.
$20 million later on, but this might have been a massive like payday for him, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
I would assume it was definitely a step up from what he'd already done.
I would assume so. Because he was already box office gold at that point by 94, right?
Well, I mean, after the first three big movies, and then he already gets a role like this, and then he get into the Ace Ventura sequels, Cable Guy, Liar Liar, Truman Show. So he goes through a good batch there of a mix of, you know, his dramatic roles and his more comedies. And then really the next film to be the next kind of big mainstream role he takes on is a Christmas film, The Grinch, which is still, it's kind of become, I think, a classic for a lot of people, even today, is to watch the Jim Carrey Grinch.
I have that, and I for the life of me, I forgot to grab it and put it in the file. But look, Andrew,
This has become on Chasing Lee, we talk about movies that get reappraised all the time. You know, after a certain amount of time, movies get reappraised. Different generations grow up, you know, whatever the case may be. This movie, I think, has gotten super reappraised over the last decade or so. I wasn't aware, Stephen, of how many people of our generation, obviously they saw this when they were young, but grew up like loving this movie, like watching it every year. Every holiday season, quoting it, all this kind of stuff. I thought people hated it for like the longest time because it wasn't very well liked by a lot of people.
And still, there's that, but then there's also like, I think because right around the same time they were doing other Dr. Seuss properties and they'd come out with the Cat in the Hat with Mike Myers. So I think people like almost associated it with that. And they were like, man, I hate the Dr. Seuss movies. You know, like they're stupid and the characters look weird. Crazy.
I love it. It's one of my favorite Ron Howard movies. And Ron Howard at this time in his career was on fire. He was making hit after hit after hit, or kind of like the type of thing that like critics and critical darlings and things that were awards type of movies. And this was one of them movies that, you know, that you put Jim Carrey in that makeup, he was just going to go to that next level.
Well, he could do the smile. That smile was like, he could do it himself.
He, like, if you talk about, I mean, we were just talking about what he did with the Riddler in Batman Forever. He took that same physicality and applied it to a role where that physicality was kind of appropriate, because you have this wacky world of Dr. Seuss where the laws of physics kind of don't matter. You know what I mean?
You can
be as physical as you want because it's literally a live action weird world from these children's books. And what is interesting is I see so many people say how ugly this movie looks or how aesthetically unpleasing it is and all these kinds of things. And I've always been like, have you read the Dr. Seuss books? All of these beings, these Whos and the Grinch, they all look very weird. You know what I mean? They're supposed to look, this is what a live action Dr. Seuss movie would look like in all of its grotesqueness. You know what I mean? And what's crazy is Rick Baker did the makeup effects for this. And I believe he was nominated for an Oscar for it. Because the whole aesthetic of that Whoville world and the Whos and that Christmas time, it's a weird, wild world come to life. Super ambitious. You talk about one-liners in this movie. I quote this movie, you know, all the time. It's got so many in there, you know, after seeing it so many times over the years. And it's such a fascinating look at what Dr. Seuss would be come to life in all of its weirdness. I love the weirdness of it.
I love it, Andrew. I just, to this very day, I love this movie. And, you know, a lot of people don't know little Lucy. No, it's not. Cindy Lou Who has grown up to be a rock star. Taylor Momsen is the leader of a rock band called the Pretty Reckless. Yep. And so you get this little Cindy Lou Who.
I've seen them.
I've seen her multiple times live, and they're fantastic. And it's you just can't put that in your head that this little girl has grown up to be this woman who's just belting out great rock songs, you know. But Ron Howard, like I said before, he was on fire at this time, and he was just putting out hit after hit after hit in that span of like a 5-year span there. It was like he couldn't do it, and he was working with like Russell Crowe and Jim Carrey and all these massive big stars, you know what I mean? And this is one of those ones that I do say he deserved whatever he got paid for. And he really, I think this is what he should have been doing with when he was playing the Riddler. And he did it this way. And it was the proper way and the proper kind of mannerisms and the whole thing. I think he kind of was, maybe he shouldn't have been chosen for the Riddler, but this to me was perfect casting. And I think he was incredible as this character. And I mean, I watched this animated movie so many times growing up, and it was just like, I cannot believe they brought this whole thing to life. I thought it was just beautifully done. The whole world, I don't know what the heck people were talking about, about the aesthetic or what a dark, I don't know. But yeah, this is a fantastic movie. Jim Carrey is incredible in it.
Yeah, it's a one-man show. I think that's part of why it works so well, because, I mean, he's playing off of a dog most of the movie, you know, so the dog can just react. And so there's not much, because sometimes when you have a comedian that's so, you know, for instance, in Batman Forever, I'm sure that maybe that movie could have turned out a little better if the chemistry between two, you know, Tommy Lee Jones and him maybe would have been better, you know, if there was a better, you know, a better person to work off of, it would have, things could have flowed better. But I mean, you know, it's to each his own. But it's, I think this movie really suited Jim Carrey even more, because it became his show, and he's an overwhelming presence. I'm sure.
And I mean, I don't, and also just for my sake, I don't mind the expansion of kind of the backstory of the Grinch. You know what I mean? Yeah. For some people it doesn't work. I mean, for me it's fine. Like it works enough for the story. It kind of fleshes things out a little bit and maybe enriches his character somewhat. But yeah, I'm with you, Stephen. The movie also has kind of a great cast in there as well. It's kind of interesting how this movie, like you said, Dan, is kind of it's right in the middle of all of other Ron Howard's like other works that are completely different. Like after this, he would do, like you said, he would do, A Beautiful Cinderella Mind.
Man. A Beautiful Mind.
Cinderella Man, you know what I mean? He would do, of course, he did like the Robert Langdon stuff after this with Tom Hanks. And then before this, he did Apollo 13. You know, you would not think that Ron Howard directed this movie if you didn't know it.
No. And it's great. It's a vision. It's a vision of what you would want from that animated film. It just come to life, and I mean, perfect casting. I mean, this times would you say, oh, perfect casting, you know, Humphrey Bogart or Rick Blaine or whatever. But this is perfect casting. I could not imagine somebody else playing the Grinch. I just couldn't, you know?
Yeah. But I think as perfect as this role is for me personally, out of this group of crop of films, this was the role out of this crop of films that I really enjoyed. I enjoy the most looking back on it. And this is a film he did a few years later, part of another IP. And that is Lemony Snicket's The Series of Unfortunate Events. I do have a video clip here for that. He's playing this terrible actor who just uses his terrible acting to try to murder people. You know, and in this case, these three kids who are the heirs of a fortune. And he continues to go after them and after them as they're trying to get away from him. And I just thought that this was just such a perfect role for him. I mean, he's an actor that is so over the top that him playing a bad actor just fits. Like any, a bad actor is somebody that goes over the top. Well, Jim Carrey can do over the top, but he does it properly, but he could also make it look bad if he wants to. That's what makes him so good, and he does it perfectly in this. And Count Olaf is a character that I know they went on to do a TV series that I think a lot of people liked, and some people say they like it more. And I would say that, you know, of course the TV series covered more ground. It covered way more ground. It was able to flesh things out a little more. And I wish the movies could have kept the story going.
Yeah,
they kind of left it open. They never made them, you know.
So. Yeah, that's the big. This movie for me is one of the biggest, not biggest. No, I wouldn't say tragedies. That's kind of a big thing, but kind of a what if scenario, because you could tell at the time that this movie came out, and just looking back at it, this was supposed to be Paramount's franchise. This was going to be their Harry Potter. Harry Potter at the time was super big. So they were like, let's get another, you know, children/YA novel series and make our own movies. So Nickelodeon, I think, bought the rights for this like early in the 2000s, Paramount's, Nickelodeon's parent company or whatever. So they made this movie. They made this movie for like $200 million. Like it's 140, I think.
Yeah, it's a budget, 140, yeah. 142 million. Yeah.
Which is pretty expensive considering the time. And the movie only made a little over 200 at the worldwide box office, so it was kind of a flop, and that's why we didn't get more. This movie only covers the first three books of the A Series of Unfortunate Events series. There's 13 of them. Coincidentally, when this movie came out in 2004, the series wasn't even done yet. The books weren't even done yet. It's interesting how you kind of only get the first three books here, and it was clearly set up, Stephen, like you said, the ending of this movie. It's like there's supposed to be more story here. The story continues on, and it's a different world looking back at what book adaptations or YA or just novels, fantasies, science fiction novels, how those adaptations were like back in the 2000s versus the way they are now. Now they're given the series treatment. Now they're put on streaming services because streaming services exist now. There's more options and avenues for these things to be adapted long form. Back in 2004 or early on, you had a two-hour movie for a however long book series that you had to squeeze in there. You know, it's such a time capsule piece of a movie. But the highlight of it for me is that Jim Carrey is really good in it. The kids are really good, and the kid actors are really good in it too.
I think that if you want to compare to the show, I believe the kid actors in the movie had way better chemistry, and they were better than the show, personally.
Yeah, the show aired in 2017, 18, and 19. Three seasons covered the whole thing. Yeah. So, of course, it had that advantage, you know?
Yeah, sure.
But the kids in the movie, like you said, Stephen, were very, very good. Yeah. Meryl Streep is in the movie.
Well, I was going to say the cast is amazing. I want to bring
up Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say the cast is amazing. Jude Law plays Lemony Snicket.
Yeah, and the movie's like the story's meta as well. It's like Lemony Snicket narrating his own story while he's writing it.
Yeah.
And he's a character in it. But Lemony Snicket isn't the author of these books. It's a very weird meta story.
Yeah.
But it's like a self-insert of the author of the books in Lemony Snicket, this fictional character. It's a talk about a world. This movie, I think, was nominated for 3 Oscars. I think it was Best Art Direction, Best Score by Thomas Newman. And then there was one more that I can't remember. But yeah, it's very interesting film.
Yeah, that cast is crazy. I mean, Timothy Spall's in it. Billy Connolly, Luis Guzman, Catherine O'Hara, as you said, Meryl Streep, Jude Law, Jim Carrey, Jennifer Coolidge is in it. Craig Ferguson's in it. Cedric the Entertainer, like, huge cast. And I think the world building is the other thing about this movie that's just so good. It is almost like, in a way, a Tim Burton-esque kind of, yeah. I'm taking it all out of Dan's mouth, apparently.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dan. You speak.
No, I mean, you guys stole the 2 things that I was going to bring up. Like, Meryl Streep is in this thing. And you're like, wow, Meryl Streep is in a Jim Carrey movie. Yes, she is, you know. And then it has such a vibe of a Tim Burton movie. You think Tim Burton directed this thing, but he didn't direct this thing, you know. Like, people were ripping off Tim Burton because he was such a popular director. Like, let's make it like a Tim Burton movie, you know, but he didn't direct it. But yeah, Jim Carrey was over the top as Count Olaf, you know. But like you said, the kids are great because they're making escape plans out of spaghetti and, oh, let's get some spaghetti going here.
I don't think that happened, Dan, but okay.
Or whatever.
They made spaghetti,
but I mean, just the story from the books are just so. I read them all, by the way. I know they're kids' books. They're kids' books. I read them all like maybe in a week, every one of them, because it was so small and so short. They just go by so fast. I was like, I gotta read these books, even though I know they're kids' books. But the books are like this thin, and they come in like a lot of them came in like this big volume, you know, just knock them all off. But so I knocked a lot of them off and I was like ready to go for this. But yeah, that's the problem with this movie is it didn't make a lot of money. And I think in Hollywood, money talks, BS walks. If you ain't making money, we're moving on to the next thing. And unfortunately, I know that's, you know, no pun intended there, but this didn't make as much. We all wanted it. People are like clamoring. Oh, come on. We need a sequel.
Well, I don't know that that's the case. I think if you liked the movie, yeah, maybe. But yeah, like,
unfortunately, there were talks for years to make a sequel all the way up until like the early 2010s. And it got to the point where the kids got to the role. They outgrow the roles. And I do want to go back and say that this movie was actually nominated for 4 Oscars, winning one. So it was nominated for Best Art Direction, Best Costume Design, Best Original Score, and Best Makeup. And it won for Best Makeup. Yeah. So this is an Oscar-winning film, technically. And those all make sense because those are all like really positive aspects of this movie. Like, this world looks fascinating the way they made it. Interesting.
Lake Wackranos, so you get some leeches on you.
Yeah. Interestingly, early on, Barry Sonnenfeld was going to direct it, and then he left the project at some point, and it was ended up being picked up by this director. What's the name's? Sperling? No.
Somebody I've never heard of.
No, it's Brad Silberling. And Brad Silberling actually directed a lot of TV early on in his career and later in his career.
He directed City of Angels.
And he directed City of Angels. That's kind of the only other thing.
And Casper.
He did some stuff. He's got a vibe in there. Yeah.
And funny enough, this was a movie that I quoted a lot. You know, this was right in the, and you know, this was a time, even though Jim Carrey was still like big in my heart, this was kind of a down time for Jim Carrey. I think he was going into an era in his career where the roles were starting to get dried up a little bit for him. He was doing, you know, he was doing more dramatic stuff and the comedy took a back seat. He was doing less movies than he used to do. And And this was, I mean, but this was a highlight for me. I used to quote this movie all the time. I mean, like the characters, all the different characters he plays in just this one movie, you know, the guy that's the snake, he's the snake expert, that he pretends to be a snake expert. And he's talking with their uncle about like, you know, he's got this voice like this. He's like, I got cocky. You know, I've been bitten on the face like 200 times. You know, this is mostly reconstructed, you know, like
boatman. Was he a boat captain or something?
Yeah, he was captain.
When he goes to the Meryl Streep part, he becomes a essentially a pirate. Yeah. You know, and he's got a leg missing and shit like that. And and then the other character he plays is what's the second character he played?
Because he's trying to disguise himself.
Or the third character.
The kids won't know it's actually him, Count Olaf.
The kind of funny thing is that the kids know him right away.
Every time he shows up.
Yeah, the adults are stupid. Yeah. They don't recognize that it's him every single time. And that's kind of the running joke throughout it, that the kids are smarter than the adults, which is kind of a nice theme, I think. But you're right, Steven. This actually comes at a time, the same year he was in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Complete opposite in terms of tone, I would say. And then, you know, right before this, he was in Bruce Almighty. So he's kind of going back and forth between, you know, drama, comedy. Because after this, he's in Fun with Dick and Jane. And then he's in the movie, The Number 23. The Joel Schumacher film, which no one seems to ever remember. And that's a dark as nails movie.
That movie is meh.
So that 2000s block. That 2000s block is such a back and forth between comedy and drama and serious and not serious, you know, children's programming, adult programming, you know, it's all kind of a mishmash there. Him kind of going through some type of growing pains, I think, as an actor during that time.
Yeah, definitely. But he would go back to Dr. Seuss in what I believe is his first animated voicing, and that's Horton Hears a Who. And this is not one that I remember well because this is not one I wanted to go back to because I don't care about this.
Yeah. Well, by this point in my life, just in perspective, so 2004, I was 17. So seeing Lemony Snicket at the movie theater wasn't such a big stretch. Seeing Horton Hears a Who 4 years later, I'm in my early 20s. I'm watching The Dark Knight in 08. You know what I mean? Like, once I saw that, I'm like, I can't go see Horton Hears a Who.
I don't need to see
it. You know what I mean? There was that time in my life in my early 20s where I, like, didn't want to see children's things anymore. You know what I mean? It, like that late teenage.
But you were watching. But you were watching Dragon Ball Z, and you.
But of course I was.
I'm watching the cool cartoon.
But I'm watching Smallville. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm thinking to myself, you guys. You know, I'm thinking to myself. I'm looking at a guy like Chris Pratt, who's playing Mario, and he's going to be playing Garfield, and he's doing all this stuff, and I'm like, that could have been Jim Carrey doing these type of things, and it's like weird that Jim Carrey didn't do more animated films and more animated characters. So Eddie Murphy was doing Mulan and Shrek and all these things. And it's like, where was Jim Carrey? Why weren't they going to him for this type of stuff? Because then he could just be the voices and do these goofy, off the wall, wacky, crazy characters.
I'm thinking it's going back to kind of what I was just saying, is like in the 2000s, he kind of didn't want to do that. It seemed like that's what it seemed like to me. Like he wanted to do different things,
and also I think being physical is part of what drives him. Like I think the physical aspect of him as an actor is important to what he does, and not that he can't do voices as well. He does voices, but I think it's important for him to be embodying the role completely. And so I think that being in the movie, I feel like it's important for him, like literally in the movie. So you know, but
I also feel like animation voiceover roles changed dramatically, I think, in the 2000s. I think that we were getting more celebrities doing them.
Yeah, it was
kind of like we get now. It's not so much voice actors anymore. Like, it kind of was in the 90s and then the 80s.
Robin Williams broke that open.
Robin Williams broke that open in the 90s. Yeah. But like, if you look at the cast for Horton Hears the Who, it's Jim Carrey, Steve Carell, Carol Burnett, Will Arnett, Seth Rogen. Isla Fisher, Jonah Hill, Amy Poehler. I mean, need I go on? There's a bunch more on here. They're just, they're all people we know. They're all recognizable names.
And I think the other thing is that Horton Hero, who isn't one of the better, more recognized. I mean, yeah, we know it, but
it's recognizable as a Doctor Who story, but it's
yeah,
it's not the Grinch. It's not Cat in the Hat. It's not Green Eggs and Ham. Yeah. You know,
no.
It's not even the Lorax with Danny DeVito.
Yeah. You know what I mean. So, and I think when you're in the kind of that heyday of like Shrek and Disney movies, like the Toy Story movies, and the Pixar was going crazy. I just think maybe this kind of got lost in the shuffle of that great animation.
Yeah, it also comes from not an off the beaten path company, but I believe this was done by Fox, and Fox is not typically known for their animation. I mean, it's like Disney, Pixar, and then like DreamWorks is up there, and then we're moving on from to like Fox and Leica, and then Blue Sky was a company that I don't think exists anymore. It's kind of a lesser known animation property and a lesser known animation company. So it doesn't have that cachet from like a Disney or
Dream. I mean, the only thing that Fox had going for them at the time was Ice Age. Ice Age was their big thing. And then,
they had three big cop actors for that.
And I guess they had Madagascar as well, right?
Yeah,
they had the Madagascar movies.
And then the Penguins of Madagascar.
Nice. And the, Horton Hears a Who, it's an interesting movie, you know, watching it as someone in their mid to late 30s is a lot different than watching it as with childlike wonder. I just thought it was kind of not insufferable, kind of boring and lackluster, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, the premise is fine. It's about an elephant who hears these microscopic little beings on top of like a speck of something, and he's basically trying to make sure they don't die. And he's communicating with them, but all of his friends think he's kind of crazy, and they don't believe him and stuff. And there's probably a good message in there or whatnot, but it's kind of gets lost. I think the movie just gets lost in a bunch of better animated films that were coming out, you know, at the time.
Yeah. I agree 100%. Actually,
well, I think after that, Mr. Carey would take a break from the animation. No.
Straight.
He actually went straight to it.
Straight vein animation.
So, arguably shittier animation.
You would think so.
Because we have that new thing where the body. Where they were putting the dots on people, and they were trying to make people. Tom Hanks was making a career out of that. This
motion capture.
Motion capture, performance capture. Tom Hanks
was making a career out of it after that point. You know.
Yeah, but at this point right now, it's not that great. It doesn't. And the movie we're talking about is A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? I really like this adaptation of A Christmas Carol. It's got that. You know, motion capture, performance capture wasn't quite perfected at the time, but it looked better than when Zemeckis had done it earlier in like Beowulf, and it looked better than Polar Express. You know what I mean? I think Lord of the Rings spoiled the hell out of people doing it with Gollum, you know, 10 years earlier or even earlier than that.
I rewatched Lord of the Rings not that long ago, and that technology looks, I mean, it looks, you can tell now. Mm. Back at it now that Gollum is CGI.
Of course.
I mean, it's the CGI is not aged.
They made those movies in the late 90s.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I
it's know. Like, it's we can imagine what the technology was like back then versus now.
The idea of a Christmas Carol, like a motion capture Christmas Carol like this, where you get this whole world, you could do that, like that Dickens world, and then And I think once again, Jim Carrey doing that type of thing is much more, I guess, more up his alley. Like you said, you want him to be more of a physical guy, so he could be more physical with the dots on. He could just do whatever, you know what I mean, and be creepy.
And you can capture the facial expressions because his facial expressions are so distinct. I also like how in this movie he plays a bunch of different roles. Yeah. He plays Scrooge. He plays the Ghost of Christmas Past. He can also play Scrooge as a young Scrooge. Yeah. He does so much in this movie.
I can't remember which character it is, but isn't he like a flame? Is that Ghost of Christmas Past?
It's the Ghost of Christmas Past is the flame. Yes.
I thought that was pretty funny. He was like a high.
It's kind of like he was like high on some type of drug.
Yeah.
like ecstasy. No, it's
Ghost of Christmas Present.
Is that what it was? Oh, you're right. Yes, the first sequence.
Yeah,
where he goes to his nephews and they're all just basically making fun of him and stuff and whatnot. Also, you talk about another cast in here as well. I think
it was Gary Oldman's
Bob Cratchit. He's Marley. He's Tiny Tim. Colin Firth is the nephew Fred. Cary Elwes is in here. Robin Wright, Bob Hoskins, Leslie Manville. It's interesting casting in here, but you won't even notice because everybody's got that mocap stuff on, so they can be whoever they want to be, really. I like the adaptation. I like the world that this movie creates. Watching this in 3D in 2009 in the theater must have been trippy as hell.
I remember watching this and I really enjoyed it, Andrew.
Dark too. The third one where it's the Ghost of Christmas Future, where it's basically death, it gets really dark and weird. It becomes like a David Lynch film. So I was all into that. Mm. I was surprising how much I liked it. I have never seen it until like 2 days ago.
I have a movie poster if you want it. I have a Christmas Carol poster from back in the day.
Were you working at the theater at the time?
Yeah.
Nice.
Most definitely. I got Horton Hears a Who as well, if anybody wants it.
Not them all.
Yeah, I got a lot of the movies from that time. I have a lot of them posters.
Do you have a poster for the next film?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. I could. Let's see. So the next film that would fit this category, I guess, it's the one that it's the last Jim Carrey movie I remember watching. One of the last Jim Carrey movies I think I remember watching at the theater while I was working there. And that's Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Nice.
Not nice. It was not a good movie. It was at a time, this was to me the lowest point for me.
It's pretty bad.
It's a generic family harmless film, like a harmless family film. That has like a wholesome story and stuff. It's fine for what it is. But I know what you're saying, Steven. If you're comparing it to the Jim Carrey that we know of, it's super basic.
At this point, he did Horton in 2008, mm-hmm. and then he did Yes Man that same year, and then after that, it's more dramatic. I mean, Christmas Carol's 2009. Then he does like an appearance on The Office for an episode in 2011. He was on Drunk History, 30 Rock, but he did that appearance in Burt Wonderstone. And then, I mean, like there's not a lot going on in this time.
Did he do that show? Was that in the teens where he did that sitcom on like Showtime or something? What's it called?
That's way later on.
That's Kidding. Yeah. Where he reteamed with Michelle Gondry, and that aired for two or three seasons, I think.
He got really good critical reviews for that.
Yeah, it got canceled like pretty quick, by quickly, I mean like two seasons or so. But yeah, I know what you mean by that. But I know what you're saying, Stephen. The only film in there that I think is a really note at this time, I Love You, Philip Morris, I think it's rather good.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in part three.
Right. But I'm just saying in terms of like that Mr. Popper's Penguins, late 2000s, early 2010s, that's kind of the only thing that really pops up. He's kind of drifting in here.
Yeah.
And then he's got that role in Incredible Burt Wonderstone, which we talked about in the first part. And this early 2010s.
We're not there yet, Dan.
It's not great. It's not that it's not great. He's not really starring in things. He's just showing up in things. Like you said, Stephen, he's in he pops up in an episode of The Office, but I'm pretty sure it's like one scene, and it's like the credits. It's like the credits at the end. I'm pretty sure it was the whole storyline where they were trying to find a replacement for Steve Carell, Michael Scott, and they just interview a bunch of people and a bunch of celebrities just make a cameo as possible interviewees. like that was the storyline at the time.
And then like I think the beginning of the next season, Will Ferrell is the boss for like
a couple Will Ferrell episodes. Ends up taking over for a couple of episodes, and then then
James Spader takes over.
He's gone, and then it's a whole that season 8 and 9. I still haven't gone back to the Steve Carell-less seasons.
I mean, this whole thing of him talking to penguins and him having this whole thing, it wasn't as bad as you think it is. I thought it was cute. And I think we were talking to, remember, we're in the penguin kind of span of our lifetime. Remember, we had the March of the Penguins with Morgan Freeman voicing the narration.
Happy Feet.
Remember, Happy Feet. So, hey, like, people were George
Miller. That's George Miller, guys.
Get it together.
Badass.
Miller, that's right. That's George Miller. You know, they were trying to capitalize on penguins at the time.
The thing is,
Jim Carrey and penguins, it's thrown together.
Just put that. The thing is, I love penguins, so I think they're like the cutest things ever. So if you're a penguin fan, you're gonna like just enjoy watching penguins do like little mischievous things and get into all kinds of shenanigans, and then they grow a bond with Jim Carrey's character and his kids. They all come together as a family. It's all this nice, warm stuff, and there's like some like a plot line in there as well.
Was this like the third Ace Ventura movie? But like,
it felt like I was watching a spiritual Ace Ventura film, where it's like Ace Ventura like forgot that he loved animals and has to relearn to love animals again. Yeah, and this time he has a family. Carla Gugino is his ex-wife.
It's a mix between Ace Ventura and The Majestic, where he loses his memory. And
what's the name? Clark Gregg plays like this evil zookeeper guy who wants to get these penguins to the zoo and stuff. And it's a forced plot, but it's really the heart of it is him getting his family together, him becoming a better guy, and all this kind of stuff.
It's formulaic to what Jim Carrey did for so many years earlier on. And he's trying to recapture that again, I think.
It's not a bad watch if you like family films.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes I'm a sucker for those.
Yeah, sometimes it works. Sometimes it's you're in the mood. Now, as Dan already jumped ahead of us, the next thing he would kind of pop up in of note was the sequel to Kick-Ass 2. Where he plays a rough and tough Colonel Stars and Stripes. And of course, if you don't know anything about Kick-Ass, this is like a rated R comic book adaptation. Was it Mark Miller?
Is
the writer. And at this time, his properties are becoming popular. Eventually, I believe The Kingsman is another one of his properties.
Oh, yeah.
And they did The Kingsman not too long after this. So he was blowing up, getting movie adaptations of his films. And so Jim Carrey plays kind of like, you know, the Nicolas Cage character of the first film. They got a big big presence to play kind of like a supporting hero in the story. And it was fun seeing him in something really unique and weird and different. You know, he plays a very ultra violent, kind of manic character, like the Nicolas Cage in the first movie, where he's Batman, but Batman with a
actual bat,
with a bat, and it'll kill you. But
this didn't live up to the first one, though. That's the thing. Unfortunately, the
movie's just not that great.
Thing is, I haven't seen this movie since I saw it in the theater back in 2013. I remember a bunch of friends and I went to watch it because we were fans of the first film. The first film was directed by Matthew Vaughn. So it had that style to it, I believe. And then Matthew Vaughn didn't direct this. This was directed by Jeff Wadlow. If that's a name you haven't heard of, that's probably why. Because he's an interesting kind of horror director. He just did that movie Imaginary, which came out this year. Before then, he did Fantasy Island. He did Truth or Dare. So you're kind of getting these kind of...
Yeah.
Somewhat middling horror films, I would say. These are kind of like the January, February horror films. You know what I mean? Those ones they kind of dumped off there a little bit. But I remember not being a big fan of this movie. It's super over the top, just like the first one. It's bloody, it's violent. Jim Carrey himself in the movie is wildly over the top and violent. Bit of a controversy after actually right around before this movie came out. he kind of disowned himself to this movie. Yeah, I think he disowns himself to this movie to this day because of the violence in it. And of course, at the time, real world things were happening with violence and things like that. And he's become very politically outspoken over the years. I think more so over the last 10 years. And this was kind of one of those moments. It's an interesting movie. Coincidentally, they're still working on putting out more kick-ass movies.
They're trying.
Yeah, I mean, I think from what I've heard is Matthew Vaughn said they already have one like that's done and that they're going to be putting out some type of new trilogy or something. I don't know. It's a franchise that hasn't put out a movie since 2013. You know, it's been a little bit. It's been a little bit. I mean, the casting of this has Aaron Taylor-Johnson reprising his role as Kick-Ass. I thought by this time he was too old for the role. That kind of put me off. And like he's supposed to be a teenager, and Aaron Taylor Johnson's walking around in this movie like he's a professional athlete in his mid-20s. You know what I mean? It's super ridiculous.
How dare you? That's our next James Bond.
Apparently.
That's a whole other thing.
Very much like Chloe Grace Moretz's character of Hit Girl.
Oh, she's amazing.
I thought that role was really, really a great role for early on in her career. But you do get a Rolodex of people. Christopher Mintz-Plasse, Jim Carrey, like we said, Clark Duke. Talk about The Office. Donald Faison is in this film from Scrubs. A bunch of people. Yeah, it's super over the top, Steven. The names for some of these characters are ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely absurd.
And I'm sure that's what drew him to this. Initially was just being a part of this weird, wacky kind of hero world.
Yeah, the buzz about this movie was that Jim Carrey was going to be in it. Yeah. I remember people literally going to this movie to see him back in some type of vintage Jim Carrey role or something, or at least that hope being there.
Yeah, yeah. But we'll finish up this part two with two big video game adaptations. Well, I mean, I guess in a way it's pretty loose because it is based on a video game. And so, yeah, Sonic and Sonic 2, as Dan is excitingly holding up his release of it and has a poster of Sonic 2 in the background. I've only seen the first one. I have not seen the second one. For what they are, it's fine. It's a fine movie. What do we think? Obviously, Dan likes them.
No, I have to tell you what. When I'm thinking about the quirky and the wacky and the goofy things that Jim Carrey did early in the 90s and the stuff, and I just see to myself, he's recaptured that as Dr. Robotnik. You could tell he's enjoying himself again, where those late 2000s, early 2000s, he just didn't look like he was enjoying acting. But if you watch him in these movies, he's over the top. He's crazy. He's wacky. I mean, he's having a blast. So, I mean, you guys have said earlier before we went on air, but looks like he's going to play Dr. Robotnik for the third time. He has never done a third film in a movie in a trilogy before. So, you could tell he really loves being a part of this. And the director who's worked with, I believe, what's his face? On the guy, Deadpool.
Ryan Reynolds.
He worked with him on Free Guy, but he's done these, right? That's the same guy that's done some of these Sonic movies, right? Am I not right?
Am I getting the
director wrong here, Andrew?
But I'm looking.
He likes working with this director.
So the first director for the first Sonic movie is Jeff Fowler. And I think he also directed the second movie.
Okay. All right. Never mind. It's different then.
Jeff Fowler's not the Ryan Reynolds guy. I know what you're talking about.
You're talking about Sean Levy, right?
Yeah, that's my fault then.
I'm mixing my guy. It's hard to remember everything.
No, of course it is. What is interesting is I agree with Dan. This is like vintage Jim Carrey from the 90s type of comedy and type of stuff. This is him in like Lemony Snicket again, playing this Robotnik character who is he's like a snidely whiplash, like mustache twirling villain. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean the whole opening scene from the first one where he meets the colonel, you know, the guy, the military guy, he's, you know, going to be in, he's going to be in charge of him. And he just fucking just smashes him in the ground. Just like, won't let him talk. Won't let him, you know, like anything he says, he just twists it and makes him look like an asshole. Like, he just such an asshole.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Characters, you know,
yeah, well, like,
but it
any,
works.
Like, yeah, any good villain, they're egomaniacs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He plays it up really well in this.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I had the Sega Genesis, and the game that came with the Sega Genesis was Sonic the Hedgehog. So that was like one of the first Sega Genesis games I ever played. I had Sonic 2, I had Sonic and Knuckles, I had Sonic 3, Sonic, and I had Sonic and Tails. I mean, Sonic has been around since what, late 80s, early 90s, easy.
Yeah,
and there's
years.
Video games that come out for every Nintendo that comes around, and
PlayStation, right?
Yeah, there's been animated series of Sonic. There's been comic books. There's been all kinds of stuff. So Sonic is a big video game franchise character, and it was about time that they gave it a live action movie. Everyone kind of knows by this point the design of it was ridiculed into the ground, yeah, to the point where they had to redesign the character for the first movie and subsequently going so forth. But we haven't had a lot of, I would say, great adaptations of video games. We haven't had a lot of good adaptations of video games. It's not really a genre that gets, or a form of entertainment or medium that gets a great adaptations into movies. It's tough. It's really tough. So when we get ones that I think are okay or good, it's kind of a plus, kind of a bonus. You know what I mean?
We've been getting a couple lately with Mario and the two Sonic movies. And
I would say Detective Pikachu, I think, is super Detective underrated.
There's some TV shows that they've been adapting.
That's where we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, books being adapted into television series. I think video games is the next step in that, adapting video games into TV series. They did it with Halo, to not a lot of people's delight. They're doing it now with Fallout. They've been talking about making a Mass Effect movie or something for years.
That's the one with Cate Blanchett coming out in August. What's that?
Oh my goodness, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that one's coming out in August. So yeah, we're now, like, the young adult book phase was like this massive phase. Now it's the video game phase where they're just trying to find.
The thing is, and they've tried.
You know,
they've tried to make that a go for like the last 30 years. I mean, we had the Mortal Kombat movies in the 90s. We had Street Fighter. I guess one out of three is not so bad. I mean,
they're coming back. Mortal Kombat, we're getting more.
Just got a Mortal Kombat movie a few years ago. We're getting another Mortal Kombat movie.
They got to Twisted Metal, had a show.
Yes.
Peacock.
Oh, that was fun. That was
You're right. That's kind of the long form now. But going back to Jim Carrey, I think he's really, really good in this role. I think, like I said, vintage Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
I think what it is he's going to do the things that he wants to do now. If he decides to act anymore, it's going to be what he wants to do. He's not going to take a paycheck anymore. It's not about doing something for his kids or whatever.
Yeah, he's talked about retirement.
He's really got to want to do it.
Yeah, he's kind of on the border now between retirement and not. Like, he says he's kind of done, and then he comes back and does Sonic 2. He says he's kind of done, and he may come back for Sonic 3. You know what I mean? You know, some actors semi-retire, some actors do retire, and like Daniel Day-Lewis has been retired for a few years. He retired before, but then came back. Who knows if he'll come back again.
Coming back again. He's got something coming back. I think he's going to be in PTA's new movie or one of these guys.
It was Scorsese's next movie.
That's right.
Playing Jesus again.
Nice.
Yeah.
but maybe he won't
have a New York accent, you know?
Yeah, well, it'll be better than that, yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, by this point, Jim Carrey, you know, we don't know what's left in the tank with him. I don't know what he wants to do, but you know, I'm always going to be a fan. So, but that is it for this part two mainstream of Jim Carrey. Part three will be the dramas, with the heavy hitters. We got a lot of great films to talk about in that group. So, but that's it for this part. Part two is done. Dan, where can they find you? I guess there's your handle right there at the bottom there. So
yeah, you can find me at, from the fourth row.com, where I'm a film critic in Orlando, Florida. Also, you know, I'm all over the place in various podcasts. I popped up on the Dill Pickle Network on Picture This. I pop up on the Movie Hero Network. Sometimes I play a little bit of trivia. I'm all over the place.
Yeah, you need to calm down, man. You need
Jack of all trades, as they say.
But you can, of course, find me and Andrew here on the channel and also doing our podcast and Unwatched Pile and all of the things we do as well. So thanks, everybody, for listening to this Movies Down Memory Lane. I hope you enjoy the memories just as much as we do.